Welcome back to Wooden Sticks. I'm Kevin Gorg, your host here on the show. Looking forward to another great hockey conversation today. I call her the Golden Girl. She's Gigi Marvin. She's from the hockey hotbed that is World, Minnesota. She's just always been that gal, right? She's been a superstar from the time she started playing in eighth grade varsity hockey up in Warroad. She became Miss Hockey in 2005. Over 400 points in her career with the Warroad Warriors program, and just a wonderful, wonderful human being. After that, she went on to play for the Golden Gophers, racked up nearly 200 points wearing the maroon and gold. And I think she's best remembered for being such a big, big part of women's hockey on the Olympic side and on the international side. She's played in all kinds of tournaments, but three different Olympics. Think about that. I mean, that just doesn't happen unless you're just extraordinary at your craft. She played in the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, 2014 in Sochi. She got silver medals in both those with her team. And then in 2018 in South Korea, the gold medal. And just a remarkable career that continues. She had retired and was doing broadcasting. In fact, worked for us at Bally Sports North. And she's got just such a unique way of seeing the game. And I think she'll get back into that at some point because she's really good at it. But the itch to keep playing was there, and the PWHL came calling. And what an opportunity for her in her mid-30s to have a chance to be still a go-to player in a league where it's just the elite of the elite. That's the cool part of this new league, is it's not watered down. It's just the opposite. It's just a tremendous product. And the numbers across the league have been remarkable. We saw the attendance set an all-time record for the home opener in St. Paul, and in all the big markets where they're playing, they're drawing big crowds, including Boston, where Gigi's playing. So we're going to talk about the incredible hockey journey that she's had. She comes from quite the hockey family, the Marvins up in Warroad, and I had a chance to sit down and visit with her mom and dad when we were up there for hockey day back in January. And she just has that. She's just a very, very cool gal that has just a different perspective on seeing the game. So I'm going to try to tee her up in our conversation today with some Wild related questions, and specifically because she's always been a star player, what she thinks of Kirill Kaprizov and how he continues to be a dominant player in this league, even though with injuries and some of the setbacks this team had off the ice this year, he was kind of left out on an island and still produces. And how he's been able to do that, I don't know. I think she'll have a unique take when it comes to Kirill. And I just want to find out how it all, you know, manifested for her. Just living in Warroad isn't going to automatically make you a gold medalist and a superstar player at all levels, whether it's high school, college, or now pro. And so Gigi's got many, many stories to tell. I'm confident that the 35, 40 minutes we're going to visit today will barely be able to touch some of these stories. But there are some great stories in there. And being that I know Gigi well and know how she sees the game, I'm sure it's going to be something that you probably haven't heard or known about her and her journey. So that's where we're at today on Wooden Sticks. And we want to make you a part of the show. We want to bring you and bring people to your business. And so Karen Cleary can help facilitate that. We've just locked up our first sponsor. We've got a couple of more on the hook. And please know that we're going to do whatever we can to pump up your business. Her email is kcleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at talknorth.com. You can be one of the sponsors here on Wooden Sticks, and you've got the Talk North network behind you, so you know that you're going to be well taken care of, and we can't wait to help you along the way. So I'm very excited to hear a unique perspective from Gigi Marvin on her journey, maybe some Minnesota Wild talk, and get to know her just a little bit better here on Wooden Sticks. And if you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to have you. Karen Cleary can hook you up. Cleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at talknorth.com. We will pump up your business and bring people to you. And of course, people in the hockey world take care of their own. And speaking of that, it's almost boating season. We had that mild winter here in Minnesota, so we're excited to get back on the water. And Beta Bay, one of our first sponsors, can make that happen for you. Here's a word from them.
Beta Bay Boat Club offers a limited number of season-long memberships in our private club and half-day or full-day pontoon boat rentals on Lake Minnetonka. Members have the opportunity to play on luxurious pontoon boats, as well as a variety of well-appointed deck boats, speed boats, and offshore boats. Our daily pontoon boats are deluxe, custom-built boats with many amenities and comfortable seating for up to 14 people. Beta Bay Boat Club, Country Club Boating, 24 years in business and voted Minnesota's best 3 years in a row. Please visit us at betabayboatclub.com for more information. We look forward to welcoming you this summer.
Welcome back to Wooden Sticks. As I mentioned during my intro, really excited about our guest today. One of my all-time favorites in terms of people I've had the chance to get to know in the hockey world. Lucky enough to have worked with her for a couple of years at Bally Sports North. She, of course, is the great Gigi Marvin. Gigi, thank you for taking the time and talking some hockey today.
I'm so excited. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I had a chance to see you. I didn't get a chance to actually visit with you this weekend. This past weekend, working the Wild game, you were honored along with Neil Broughton and a bunch of great Minnesota athletes. Went into the Star Tribune, Minnesota Sports Hall of Fame. That had to be a real fun experience to be out there with football players, basketball players, and of course Neil Broughton, an all-time great hockey player. But that was quite a select group.
It was really fun. It was awesome to just get to know some of the other different inductees and be able to celebrate together and even standing on the ice hearing the names being introduced. I mean, the crowd went nuts when Neil was introduced, right? It kind of gave me goosebumps seeing how being able to stand next to him and just hear the crowd go wild. And I had my family there as well. And it was just such a special moment for me.
And you got a little break in the schedule. How's life in the PWHL? You're playing out in Boston. The league seems like it's off to a terrific start.
It is. It's incredible, actually, what's been happening. And the league is so competitive. The games are so tight. Excellent competition night in, night out. And it's been remarkable watching the attendance figures across the league. We've seen multiple attendance records shattered, whether Canada, U.S., or not, like North American. And even ours, we don't actually play in downtown Boston. We play in a town probably 30 miles north of Boston, and we still like right on the New Hampshire border, and we still pull in about 4,000 people a game. And it's just, that's something that around the league, people have been blown away by the response that we've had from our fans and just the attendance numbers.
I look at what you guys have done in the PWHL, and we saw that unbelievable. Well, we saw crowds everywhere opening week, but the crowd in St. Paul, an all-time record crowd, just short of 14,000. I look at Caitlin Clark and women's basketball and paging forward to where the WNBA is headed. You know, in our lifetimes, I don't know that women's athletics has ever been in a better spot right now, Gigi.
I would agree with that. And a lot of it started with the U.S. soccer, like the women's national team, mm-hmm. and what they were able to do and the success they've had. And now you're seeing exactly like you mentioned, Caitlin Clark taking on UConn in the Final Four and then trying to take down the powerhouse was in South Carolina that won again.
Yep.
And it's just really cool to see that sort of I don't even know what to describe it as, but it's just legendary what's happening. And it's really cool to kind of be able to experience a little bit of that our own for the sport of hockey. We've noticed and we've known all along, ever since the Olympics, and I think it was 2014, where we had an incredible record number of people viewing our U.S.-Canada gold medal game. And we're like, this is something that people want to be a part of. They want to watch, they want to attend. So we just need people to believe in us to like support it so that we can get it off the ground and running. And now that it's been happening, it's just been awesome seeing the response.
And now having, you know, for young hockey players out there that play girls hockey, to have this league, to have these crowds to look at as a landing spot, if there are some of the elite players at their level, yes, Division I hockey is going to be on the radar, absolutely playing for their country, which we're going to talk about here with your storyline here in a little while. But to have that league and to have a league that's flourishing in the markets this league is in, you know, you mentioned Boston where you're playing, Minnesota, Ottawa, Montreal, New York. I mean, these are not only big hockey markets, these are big sports markets. And for young girls out there to have this to shoot for, I just think it's going to have a huge ripple effect on the game at the grassroots level. I think when you're going to look at young hockey players just getting started, this is going to change the trajectory of where this thing is going. I think it's all boats rise. I think the game is only going to get better.
I agree. I think when you can see it and see it live, it changes. It does something in your heart. Like, I don't know about you. I'd be curious to know who your favorite player was growing up, or what the first person you saw maybe hold a mic and you're just like, or even coach. But for me, I mean, I always grew up and all I saw was guys. And so I love Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg. I mean, I remember the old Devils Wings and Avalanche rivalries. Like, it seemed like every single year fighting for a cup between those three teams. And then not until, but there was something that changed when 1998 came, and I got to watch people who looked like me, who had a ponytail like me, who were women. And like, I'm like, this is incredible. This is what I get to do. And so that's what's changed everything for me. And to know that that is happening right now all across the country and even the world, where players are able to, young girls are able to be like, wow, these girls look just like me. I wonder if I can do that. I wonder if I will have the ability to do that. That's what I want to shoot for. And that's what I want to go for. And so just to know that those dreams are being solidified simply by them witnessing a game is really cool. Cause I know exactly what it did to not just my career, but my life. I mean, you talk about how small the hockey world is. I mean, the amount of friends and connections and people I've been able to meet through this great game all started with simply being able to turn a TV on and having a group of people literally being willing to produce women's hockey on TV, and for a girl in rural Minnesota to watch it and see it live happening. It changed everything for me. And so it's really cool knowing that that same experience is happening for kids all across our country.
Yeah. For me, it takes me back to the 70s. I would turn on TV and there was a nationally televised game and they had this cartoon. It was called Peter Puck. And recently I've gone into to the YouTube and gone down that whole web verse and watched some of the old broadcasts. But Peter Puck was this intermission cartoon that they had that would teach young people the game of hockey. And he was just fascinating for me as a youngster. And then I started watching the actual games and identifying the goalie as kind of the position where I wanted to migrate towards. And once I could figure out who the goalies were, I fell in love with a couple of goalies, Tony Esposito with the Blackhawks and later Gilles Melache with the North Stars. And they were, you know, my role models, my mentors, my idols. It kind of led me to having that passion for hockey. And you're a lot younger than me, but you know, we always talk on wooden sticks on the pod here about when you got started, how much the equipment has changed. And you probably started when you were a little kid, but you probably started skating in earnest in the 90s. So the equipment, specifically the sticks, since you started, has changed dramatically, has it not?
Yeah. I mean, I remember my first stick, it was a compound. Is that what they were called? Compound sticks?
Yes.
With a shaft and then the blade popped in. And of course, like all I had to do was go down the street and to Christian Brothers and pull off a blade off the line, you know. And my dad would come home. Actually, my favorite Christmas gift I ever got. So I started with those composites, but then I got wood sticks, and my dad hung from our Christmas tree outside Christmas morning. He hung like 10 new wooden sticks that he had just got at the factory and brought them over for me. And it was one of the best. He stamped GG on it. And it was just so cool. These little right-handed sticks that were just, who knows, probably a 45 flex, like just little, but such a wonderful Christmas gift for me.
What a creative idea to have them hanging on a tree.
I know, it was genius. And then, I had the composite for a while, then I had the wood stick, and then probably in 2000, I switched over to and had my first Easton Synergy, which was awesome. It's still one of my favorite all-time sticks that I used.
And life in Warroad, and I know we've had this conversation, but for our listeners, you know, once you started playing the game and having just been up there for Hockey Day Minnesota just a few months ago, and then having the reminder, because I'd been up there a handful of times and I've never spent a bad minute in that town. The people are so damn nice. And for a guy like me that just loves hockey, everywhere you go, that's kind of that's everything. That's the conversation. But for you as a kid, what was it like to have such a hockey-centric community around you, even when you were little? How young were you when you kind of figured that part of it out?
Oh, I mean, third grade. My third grade gym teacher was an Olympian. I'm like, this is just crazy. The guys down the street, everyone, it's every house that seemed like down the river were all Olympians and, or NHLers. And it's like, where do I live? That it's so common and consistent that you look around and these people who come to the rink or come to the school or, whether they teach, coach you, or just there to cheer you on, are willing to give back and share. And they're just regular, you know, they're not, flaunting it or, above you. Other people, they're regular down to earth guys who were super kind and genuine and just loved the game of hockey.
Did you play boys hockey when you were younger, or did you always only play with the girls?
I played boys hockey until eighth grade. And then, so I played through peewees, and then I started varsity in eighth grade for girls.
And that's another dynamic that I think gets overlooked sometimes, but being a varsity hockey player as an eighth grader, it's a different experience when some of your teammates and good friends in that locker room are 17, 18 years old. Even the conversations at the rink about, you know, everything but hockey, you know, they're different for a 17 or 18 year old that's going on to college than they are for an eighth grade kid. What was it like to navigate even just those relationships at such a young age?
Yeah, you're right. It was an interesting dynamic. Thankfully, I had a great group of seniors. Like, you know, one of them, Mo's shooter, of course. And then my cousin Bethany was on the team as well. And I had a lot who were also softball players. So I actually had played on the varsity softball team as well the year before. And so I knew a lot of the girls. And so you're right. There's definitely conversations that go over my head. But for the most part, like the girls were very welcoming and kind. And I felt pretty safe with them. And very entertained for sure. But I also just had such a desire to be the best at such a young age that like it was, I kind of just wanted to talk hockey for the most part. Like I really enjoyed being at the rink and learning from them. And so I would ask them questions or just kind of try to pick up as much as I could.
So you're playing at Warroad, you go on to post, I don't know, over 400 points in your high school career. I remember at that time I was coaching the women's team at St. Thomas, kind of watching your career from afar, knowing you were never going to be on our radar because we were Division III. So for you, knowing you were going to be a Division I hockey player, was it always going to be Minnesota? Were there other teams on your radar when it got right down to it? Or how did that whole time, you know, as a high school superstar, you know, and again, you knew long before your senior year probably where you were going. How did that play out in your mind?
I think I always knew I wanted to go to the U, but I did take a trip out east mainly to check out the academic aspect of it, to Dartmouth and Harvard, and which was actually really good for me. I enjoyed going out there and seeing what it was like because it immediately solidified in my heart a no-brainer that I was going to Minnesota. And I remember coming home and probably the hardest conversation I ever had with my grandpa. I remember being so nervous because my grandpa, he's at started the program at North Dakota and is just like legendary for what he's done there and how much he loves the Fighting Sioux. Like I remember sitting across from the table at him when I made my decision in August, like in the summer, and being like, so Gramps, how would you, I think I'm going to go to Minnesota. Is that going to be okay with you? Like terrified, this little young teenager, just terrified what her grandpa might say. And then I didn't need to be because he came back with what like I should have known already, but he's like, Gigi, anywhere you play, I'm going to be cheering for you, you know, like, and I'm like, oh goodness, thank you. But like, there's such a rivalry with the Gophers and the Sioux back in the day for sure when they were in the same conference and everything. But it was, yeah, it's funny to look back on because, and I'm really grateful for that time because he passed away probably 4 weeks later.
Oh, so that conversation absolutely mattered. And one of your great memories. Yeah. And I think it's, I get it too, because the North Dakota thing is legit, you know, in world, you know, I think of TJ Oshie right off the hop, one of your former classmates and superstar player on the boys side. It's a natural for sure. But I think looking back at that time where the program was in North Dakota, where the program was in Minnesota at that time, I mean, it had to be almost impossible for you not to be a Gopher, being the player that you were at Warroad. And it certainly worked out, right? I mean, it ended up being a great choice for you. You had an awesome go of it at the U of M. And I'm just fascinated when I always am reminded when I get ready you know, kind of walk down memory lane with you, Gigi, is if you get to one Olympics, and I can't even speak to it. It's only in my mind is, okay, that's incredible. But you're at three. You're in Vancouver, Sochi, and South Korea, three different Olympics. I can't imagine how much fun that had to be a part of three different teams to represent, you know, the country and wear the red, white, and blue.
Oh, it was so special. And each one, everyone's always like, what's your favorite? And I'm like, well, obviously got to be the last one, right? Because we won gold. But it's so hard to choose, to be honest, because so many special memories from each of them. Like, to be able to, in Vancouver, it was my first ever one. So the moment walking opening ceremonies and having, I think I had 10 to 15 family members in the stands for the games, since all you had to do was hop in the car and drive across the country. And then the Sochi one was just, I felt like I was back in high school with TJ. Like he exploded, and yes. I feel like the next morning, everything was about World High School. And I mean, we'd be sitting in the cafeteria and all of a sudden I'd be eating, and all of a sudden TJ's like, see you, Gigi, going to the rink. And him and David Backus are walking by, and I'm like, same thing. Like, that's what happened in high school. Like, you'd be sitting in the cafeteria in high school and you'd just be like, yep, see you later, going to the rink or going to your next class. And then of course, Korea, you can't get better than Korea winning a gold medal. And I got to have, six of my friends flew out, and then my parents and my brother and sister-in-law were there as well. And so, so many memories, so many different kind of stories, but yeah, each one's special and unique for their own, purposes, I guess.
Well, I've told you the story before. We were ironically in Vancouver when you won that gold medal. And because of the time change, we all wanted to watch it live. And it was on in the middle of the night. I want to say the game started at maybe 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the Wild were playing the Canucks the next day. And there was no doubt about it. Most of us on the Bally Sports North crew were going to stay up and watch the game. And we did. We were texting the whole time. And it was a remarkable hockey game. And I just looked back and, you know, knowing that you'd had the silver the last two, and here it is, this third chance, you know, which you rarely get, right? In hockey, you rarely get a third Olympic try. That has to be, in terms of your hockey career, I don't know where it stacks up, but it's got to be near the top, that one particular night, that one game.
Yeah, you're spot on. Like, as far as what we were able to accomplish on the ice, definitely that moment was the pinnacle. And I think a lot of people don't quite get why, you know, like, why is an Olympic championship so much bigger? And I think it's because you have to wait 4 years, like 4 years. Yep. It's not just, oh, next year we'll be back. And so for us, those of us who had been on the team, that would have been our third Olympics at the time. That was 12 years in the making, like on the national team, in the Olympic competition. It took a long time to get there. And so the emotions were just like one of the best you could ever feel. It was so cool.
So I'm friends with Danny Brooks. He was on the podcast last week, and about two summers ago, we had a charitable dinner function where he brought some paraphernalia from his dad's Olympic run back in 1980, including the gold medal. Couldn't believe how heavy those things were. And my question to you is, you've got three, you've got two silver and a gold. I might end up putting them in my bed and sleeping with them. What do you do with your medals? Are they displayed? Are they in that bed with you? I mean, they can't be too far away from you at any time.
You know what? I leave that up to my mom. I let her decorate the house, and she changes it up every once in a while and has different themes going around the house. But they're usually on display there. And then I'll travel with the gold medal usually when I go to different places so that people can see that. But they, both of them, all three of them are special in their unique way. And it's really cool how the Olympics has them different each year and just makes them really personalized to the country. So it's cool to even have them all laid out side by side.
It's really heavy, right? They're still the same as they were back in 1980. They're heavy.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, the 2018 medals are known as the heaviest in Olympic history. And so, yeah, those you could definitely feel hanging around your neck for a while.
Well, I'm glad you brought your mom up, because I mentioned we were in Warroad for hockey day, and you weren't there because you were playing pro hockey, but your mom and dad were nice enough to stop by our hotel and bring these unbelievable bars. And I'm telling you, I was good. I only had about half the thing. And I brought a lot of them to the TV truck the next day. Our great friend, Trevor Fleck, just so wonderful at what he does as one of our executive producers at Bally Sports North and a mutual friend of both of ours. And I brought them to Trevor. And I got to tell you, in unison, we all talked about it when the day was over, just how damn good those things were. Tell us about the bars, the story behind them, and why they're so good.
Oh, they're so good. Yeah, I agree. And so my mom loves baking. Like, she has treats. She's just this teeny tiny petite little woman, and she just has such a sweet tooth. And so she'll make so many different bars. And she came up with this one recipe that, this concoction that is just unbelievable. And we call them Connie bars after her. Mm-hmm. And so all my, I would go on road trips, and I was known as the kid who had the best lunchbox. Like, people would try to sneak all my food from me. Like, no joke. My friends were just reminding me of this a couple weeks ago when I was home. And geez, remember when you had the best lunchbox? Remember when we used to take like your this out of there and then this and this homemade thing? And like, so everyone knew about Connie bars and everyone wanted them. So my mom started, because she knew I would never got mine, that she packed, because the kids would like snag them from me somehow. They would team up to try to distract me. And she would just make bars every time like a team would go to state. And it just became something that even when myself or my brother weren't on the team anymore, she would still make them. So every year when a Warrior team goes to the state tournament, they get a pan of Connie bars. And obviously every team that I've been on, they always get Connie bars. So like, even this pro team that I'm on, my parents brought down two pans of bars because we inhaled them when we were at the Xcel Energy Center in February and March. And everyone on my team loves them. So yeah, they're pretty special. My mom is a great cook, and we enjoy sharing those with everyone.
I had just a ball sitting in the hotel talking with your mom and dad. And then, I mean, people were staring. I mean, there was a giant pan of these bars, a big plate, I guess it was. And I felt so proud. And the next day, well, number one, I was so happy I didn't eat the whole thing, because honestly, I ate the first couple. I'm like, oh man, I gotta hide these. So I actually, for a while in my hotel, I tucked them in where all my gear was for the next day, my outdoor clothing for the day. And I don't know how much you get a chance to watch it, but we had such a ball doing hockey day up in Warroad. It had been something that was on our bucket list when this whole thing started. Like, this is a place we have to get to. And in your mind, you hope it works out. And then the day finally comes and the crowds are unbelievable, which we shouldn't have been surprised by. The rink, the setting, I mean, I got to tell you, and it came out in the broadcast, but I mean, it was 30 degrees and basically sunny, perfect conditions, perfect ice. How much of that did you get to watch?
I got to, I'd have friends and family sending me videos and pictures, but I didn't get to watch much because, like you mentioned, I had my own game that day. Yep. And so we had our whole game day situation going on. And plus, like, I don't know, I didn't get much of the coverage. So I would go online and go on Twitter and like watch as much as I could, the different updates and things like that. But I definitely couldn't watch live, but it looks stunning. And how cool that, like you mentioned, like 30 degree weather in Warroad, Minnesota. Crazy. In January, that's unheard of. And so it's very, it worked out extremely well.
And I got to tell you, our mutual friend, your former teammate, my former player, Mo Hardwick, she was like the mayor. You couldn't go to one spot in Warroad that weekend and not bump into Mo. She was the first person I saw when we got there. Rhonda Curtin was working on our broadcast, and we were going to go do a little outdoor thing. And literally our first stop, there's Mo. She was everywhere and she was having a ball. And nobody supports Warroad hockey like Mo Money, but I just thought it was so fun to see not just her, but the entire hockey community kind of come together. And it was just such a celebration. People were so excited to be there volunteering, working. We had a bunch of Olympians there. Neil Broughton, the guy that you just went into that Hall of Fame with over the past weekend, had a chance to work with him and some of the guys from the 1980 Olympic team. It just, Gigi, it did Warroad proud. And that's what I was most happy about is, you know, Warroad is such a great place. And if you love hockey like all of us do, you just want them to have the chance to show what they can do. And I'm telling you, they crushed it. And I'm so happy we had the chance to do it.
Oh, that's so good to hear. I'm really grateful to that it was such an incredible experience, because I know even in the summer, I mean, going home to run my hockey camps, I would meet with some of the board members who were putting that together, and it was awesome looking at the design and the hard work going into it and the creativity, and to see it all come together in such a beautiful way is something that is really special.
We're all really excited that you're playing in the P-Dub, and your broadcasting career is on hold. We'll leave it at that. But, you know, for me personally, Gigi, part of the reason I was so excited to connect with you again today on this podcast is because some of my best memories on the job were those couple years you worked with us and took some road trips. Because I've told my hockey buddies this, you know, when we get done working a game, we always, you know, the TV/radio crew, we always sit in the back of the bus or the back of the airplane and have a chance to visit about what we just watch. And I've been around hockey for 50 years, and I know plenty. I've coached, I've played, I've done all these things. But talking to you, you have such a different perspective on watching the game. And I think a lot of it is the player you are and the player you always have been. You see the game a little differently. It's always made you this extraordinary hockey player. So when I look at Kirill Kaprizov and I look what he is still doing, and this has been a tough year for the Wild. They're not going to be in the playoffs. We're all bummed about that. But when people ask me what the vibe is like and what it's like at the rink, I said, listen, if 97's out there, we're all on the edge of our seat or on our toes, like watching the game. There's just something special about watching the very best. Another 40 goal season for this guy. Gigi, why is he able, even in a year like this, where the Wild have all these injuries and every team is putting their best shutdown line/defensive pairing out against him, why is he able to continue to produce year in and year out in your eyes?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's so fun watching him. And I love his compete level, to be honest. I remember so many games we would call and work that, yes, he would dangle and he would do his mohawks and his edge work and fly around the, like, basically do a wrap around the net on his edges, like hang on like a figure skater. Yeah. But what always impressed me so much was his fiery desire to win puck battles, win board battles, win the puck, and just be relentless in his compete level. And so I think when you have that fire inside you, that demand to be the absolute best and like kind of never settling, like I don't know, I guess that just separates players. You can see it among the best of the best, and it's legendary, you know. I think at this point, how long he stays after practice and just like passes and shoots with Zouk, you know, and
it's amazing.
Even in warmups, like my little nephew noticed, like, oh, all he does is pass to Zouk. Like, oh, that's all they're doing. They're passing back and forth. Sure enough, in a game, who passes in the puck and he snipes. And so even a little 7-year-old is noticing that connection. But I think for me, what I am really impressed with, yes, he has incredible skill and speed and just the balance with which to do all of this, but it's his desire and fire within him that like it separates him and allows him to be so successful.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the practice thing up, because that's another layer to the legend that is Kirill Kaprizov. And I've had this conversation with many people, and it happened again last week. I had one of my dear friends, Mike Luckraft, who's the head hockey coach for the Northfield boys team. He's a golf pro at the golf course at Mystic Lake Meadows, and his little boy is 6 years old and is thinking about becoming a goalie, and he loves Marc-Andre Fleury. So Mike is kind of in between wrapping up the hockey season, getting ready for the busy golf season. He said, can I bring my wife, Katie, and then my two kids, Tegan, his daughter is 4 and Landon 6, to practice? I said, sure. So they come to practice last week. It was last Friday, and they had a ball, and we're all kind of watching the practice together. And Landon literally is on the plexiglass. He can barely see over the dasher, but he's close enough where he can just lock in on Marc-Andre Fleury. And so I said, mark my words. I told Mike, I said, mark my words, practice is going to get over. The coach is going to leave, and there'll be a half an hour that goes by, and there'll be a handful of people on this ice. And I promise you, two people are going to be out there: Kirill Kaprizov and Marc-Andre Fleury. And of course, I had to leave to go do my media stuff, do the coach presser, run down to the locker room. It's about 25 to 30 minutes after practice. I come back upstairs and they're still out there doing skill games.
Wow.
Fleury's out there doing his thing. Kaprizov's out there. The reason I bring it up is it's rare, right? Like, these guys are one of them's going to be a Hall of Famer right away in the next couple of years. The other one's going to be a Hall of Famer whenever he decides he's done, 10, 15 years down the road for Kaprizov. And I think it's, Gigi, you can tell me, but when you're a young, talented player, and the two most respected guys in that room, as far as talent goes, are the hardest working guys, there has to be a ripple effect.
100%. There's such a, it's such an accountability factor as well when you see guys like that at their level doing what, doing that day in, day out. Like, they do not take a break. I feel like there's so many times I even saw them where they're just out there working on their craft, and which is such a testament to their love of the game. They seriously feel like, I look at them and I'm like, they're just 5-year-olds out there skating, having a blast. And it's really cool when, and it's not easy to do. It's when you're getting paid like they are, and the pressure, and that is an actual job. And, just like your performance, a lot rests on your performance, that those guys are able to have so much joy and be so free and want to be at the rink so much. Like, it's really special and unique. And, I know it has an effect on the young kids coming up, and to be able to see that, and hopefully they're asking as many questions as they can, and it's just rubbing off on them in a very positive way.
And for you now, this season in Boston, you know, I remember talking to you a couple of years ago, and, you know, you weren't quite sure if you were going to keep playing or keep broadcasting. You were kind of in the middle. And I knew from talking to you that if you could play and there was an opportunity, that you would play. And I'm so happy that you are. Has it lived up to your expectations? Has this experience, you know, going back out there playing pro hockey, and I know the league's doing great, and I know you're in Boston, which is one of my very favorite cities, but has it met your expectation? Because it's a ton of work, right?
Yeah, it is a lot of work. And I retired for 2 years, and so it took a lot of energy to come back and put more strength on my body, and more like just the power, the speed, the explosiveness, the agility, all that stuff. But thankfully it came back pretty naturally, which I'm very grateful for. And this season has been a whirlwind. I feel like it's gone by so fast already. We only have 5 games left in the season, but it's been such a joy. Usually some of my favorite memories are competing in front of my niece and nephew. They haven't been able to watch me too often live. And so for them to be able to come down to the XL Energy Center and cheer and scream and bang on the glass during warmups to get a puck flip to them has been really special. And I've enjoyed seeing the growth of the game, and I've enjoyed being able to be a part of something that me and my teammates and those who went before us worked so hard to like have come to fruition.
And Boston's one of my very favorite cities to travel to. We only get to go once a year with the Wild. So I got to ask you, what do you do to get away from hockey? If it's an off day or after practice on a non-game day, what are some of your favorite spots in Boston? What do you like to do?
Well, I love like hanging out with friends. And I mean, we live like right on the water, and so the ocean is pretty cool. And so we'll go down to the ocean quite a bit and just, play games outside or rollerblade along, the Esplanade. But even downtown Boston is so cool. Or going to Fenway. Like, Fenway is such a great ballpark, right? I know you've been there quite a bit, and it's just, so there's quite a bit to do. Or like just walking around downtown. What I like about downtown Boston is that you got so much history, and it's a big city, but at the same time it feels small and compact, where you can walk and be in a beautiful garden like Boston Common, or you can go see incredible like history stuff at Beacon Hill from like the 1700s. I mean, it's just crazy to think about how long some of these things have been here and what kind of the history has been. Just in this small town, I guess. But yeah, I've enjoyed living here.
All right, we've come to the final segment of our time together, Gigi. This is what we call the hat trick hot seat. I'm going to give you 3 questions. The good news is there's no wrong answer. And a lot of this, I think, will just be fun for you. But there are 3 questions I have, and it's just a kind of a get to know you a little bit better. If tonight, whether you're going out to dinner or you're cooking it, you can have your very favorite meal. And take the professional hockey out of the equation. So we're not eating to prepare to, you know, be a highly trained athlete. We're eating because we love it. Your favorite meal, whether it's restaurant or at home, what would it be tonight?
I'm going with steak and sweet potatoes.
Yeah, you had me at steak. I love steak so much.
Steak. I feel like it's I could have just stopped at steak because I just love it.
All right.
I don't need anything else. Just fill me up on steak.
I could eat a whole plate of it. I don't need any potatoes, but if you're going to throw me some, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'll take it. But I do love steak. And we're now finally through winter here and ready to start grilling again. So I'll get that thing fired up. I got to get it going here probably in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be in the 70s next week here and back in Minnesota. Wow. So next question is, when you were younger, the very first concert that Gigi Marvin attended was what and where was it?
Oh, it was Shania Twain at the Xcel Energy Center.
Now, what a great, now that right there, if you're a professional hockey player, why not go see a Canadian? And I'll guarantee you, she had a hockey jersey on at some point.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Now, if you're going to vacation, my third question to close out the hat trick, your favorite place to vacation would be?
It's a split between either St. Thomas down in the U.S. Virgin Islands or our family cabin up in northern Minnesota, Pine Acres. I mean, up there is so secluded. It's beautiful. You can water ski and fish all day long. I don't know. It's a toss up.
Well, you can have one for the winter, one for the summer, because you'll probably
go
to the cabin in the summer. And in the winter, St. Thomas sounds just delightful.
This
has been awesome. I love catching up with you. I hope that you're going to get back down to Minnesota at some point this summer. Maybe come out and see us at the racetrack. I'll be out there with your buddy Paul Allen at Canterbury all summer long. And anytime I get to spend with you, whether it's in person or visiting like we are today, I have a smile on my face and I'm still smiling. Tell your mom. From those county bars. I'm not kidding you. Listeners, you're going to have to trust me. You've seen me, so you know that I haven't been cheated anywhere. These are the best dessert bars I've ever had, and I'm no BS. Like, there is something about those bars. I took two of them. I downed them that afternoon after your parents left my hotel, and I'm not kidding. I had to hide those suckers so I wouldn't go back in for more. I didn't want to show up at the TV truck the next day because Trevor knew I was coming, and if there was an empty tray, I would have been so embarrassed, but they were that good. So please pass that on to your mom about the Connie bars. And
I will.
Thanks for being a part of Wooden Sticks.
Thanks for having me. It's always, I'm smiling too. Just love being able to hang out with you and chat with you.
We'll take a short break. You're listening to Wooden Sticks right here on the Talk North Podcast Network. We're back on Wooden Sticks and really thankful to Beta Bay Boat Club. We are excited to enjoy that warm weather next week here in the Twin Cities anyway. Looking at 60s, maybe 70s, Beta Bay Boat Club, something you want to definitely check out as we segue from the cold bitterness of winter and the heart of hockey season into playoff season. Even though it won't include the Wild this year, we're going to get a good taste of some wonderful matchups. Can't wait to see how that plays out. And of course, the weekend ahead, we're going to see some of the best Division I men's programs in the country come down to St. Paul for the Frozen Four. That should be spectacular as well. Can't thank Gigi Marvin enough. Her journey is such a great one. And, you know, Warroad, what a place to be a hockey player. And, you know, she was the best of the best. When she was at Warroad starring for the Warriors, I was coaching at St. Thomas. So I watched a bunch of her games, not only at Warroad, but on to the University of Minnesota, where she was a star there as well. So cool that she got to play in three different Winter Olympics. And I just think it's fantastic that she's still thriving and still playing pro hockey. And I know how much she loves the game. The passion she has for hockey is legit. The conversations we had when she was broadcasting were so amazing. Just the way that she sees the game, loves the game, and is such a part of the game. I thought it'd be a really fun conversation today, and it lived up to the hype. She was fantastic. We're looking forward to more great conversations here down the road. Again, you can be a part of it. Kay Cleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at TalkNorth.com. She's the hook for you. Karen will give you a good look at being a part of Wooden Sticks. I'll be back next week with another great guest. Thank you for being a part of the show as well. Without the listeners, there is no Wooden Sticks. I'm Kevin Gorg. I'll either see you at the rink or hear you right here on the Talk North Podcast Network next week.